I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM. In Chris Mansky's new book, The Prepared Investor, he says, there's a typical Wall Street response to any and all crises. Keep your diversified portfolios in place, and someday, maybe years from now, investments will return to where they once were. And this type of waited out mentality implies there's no way at all to prepare. So the follow-up question is, how do you become a prepared investor ready for any storm that comes your way? Stay tuned and you'll learn this answer and more in this must-listen-to episode.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Come to Game, where we flip the script on the old-school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Hey there, friends. I hope you're doing well. I'm going to be hitting you with a bunch of investing episodes over the next few weeks, so I hope you don't mind. It is always a number one goal for so many people for the new year, and my hope is that you find someone on this show that you really resonate with. Maybe someone's insights spark something in you that gets you more engaged with your investing and, quite honestly, just how you deal with money overall. And this episode, this one is going to be epic. As Chris Mansky says, does it make sense that no matter the type of crises, Wall Street always advises investors to just stay the course? You've probably heard this so many times, right? There's this story that is usually told about investing through crisis, a story that focuses on inaction and patience. Just wait it out. You hear that literally all the time. Well, in Chris's book, The Prepared Investor, he shows that the true story of investing through crisis is very different, and that if we want to understand how to protect and grow investments during crisis and calamity, we just need to spend more time actively preparing for it. So let's do that, right? Let's do that in this episode. Let's learn how to get prepared. Let's hear more from Chris. I was telling you before we hit the record button, I have dog-eared almost every page, it feels like, in your new book, The Prepared Investor. And I wanted to go through some parts that really jumped out. Really, in the intro section, you say there's a typical Wall Street response to any and all crises. Keep your diversified portfolios in place, and someday, maybe years from now, investments will return to where they once were. And then you go on to say that this type of just the waited out mentality implies that there actually is no way to prepare. And the whole book goes into basically debunking that. But I'd love to throw the question you asked kind of back at you. You know, how has the majority of the investing public just accepted this idea for so long now?
I think the reason that it's been so well accepted and so, you know, dog-eared, just to use the phrase you had said, is that the, you know, the idea of doing nothing is easy. You know, it's just so simple. It takes no effort to say I'm out of control and I just have to stay the course. So that's one reason. Another reason that it's lasted so long is because it's also simple to sell that idea. It's very, very nuanced and complex to talk about the various steps to prepare for crisis. And so it's a lot easier for a brokerage force, for the Wall Street advisor, to just sell the idea of it's, you know, it's going to be okay. You don't have to do a thing. And then you kind of couple that with our natural inclinations. I mean, our natural inclination is to form up, do the same thing as everyone else. You've heard the phrase "misery loves company." You know, this is what we naturally do. It, you know, it's why they call it the herd of investors. You know, the herd meaning like the herd mentality.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting because I've been doing this show now for almost 6 years now. Hard to believe, and I'm a CFP myself, so. You know, I know a little bit about investing enough to be dangerous, but I think over these 6 years, you know, the common question I get from people about investing is this difference in thought patterns, the difference between the buy, hold, don't worry about it. If the stock market tanks, it's okay. You've got, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever it may be, versus the other side, which is more, you know, the active investor, be prepared. And I think if I can speak for my listeners, a lot of them are in this state of just complete confusion and almost don't do anything. You know, how do we budge from that point?
It is hard. You know, it requires having two thoughts in your mind at the same time. And in fact, I think of it a lot like the example of, an infant who is ill. And it's a really serious situation. And this little baby's in the hospital. And a week goes by. And the baby is definitely getting better, but is not healthy yet. So that means when we look at this situation, we have to accept, and of course we would be happy that it's been a week where the baby's been getting better. You know, the illness is starting to subside and we can clearly see that the baby's healthier. But at the same time, we have to also hold in our minds that this little child is not yet fully healthy. It's two totally different thoughts. It's getting better, but it is also not where we want it to be. And so having two thoughts in your mind is just hard for people to do. And I like that example because that's what, you know, people have to do when it comes to the active and passive approach. the passive approach, the, you know, just be diversified and stay the course, it's appropriate. You know, in fact, in the book, I talk about how there's absolutely crises where that is the right approach. It's just that it's not the right approach for every single situation. And so at the same time that, you know, that passive approach makes sense, there is also the appropriate times to be prepared, the appropriate times to be proactive, to use your intellect and your understanding of the world around you to be able to get ahead. And both of those concepts, I mean, people kind of think it's either or. You can't do both, but you can.
Yeah. And I, you know, talking about crises, the whole book is you go through crises after crises and kind of how the market responded and maybe what you should or shouldn't have done in that particular moment. And you talk about these two different types of crises, the threatening and the systematic. And I'm curious if you could run through, you know, what's the difference between these and maybe why should we care?
Yes. Well, okay. So why should we care is because there are times when the type of crisis is going to matter. You know, it, in fact, it's a lot like when you're driving your car. You know, you could have a tire that's low on air and you're going to be just fine. You'll get where you need to go. You can worry about pumping it up at a later date. But if you have a flat tire, that's a much different crisis. You know, it means you've got to do something different. And it's the same with you know, the systemic versus threatening question. I mean, I think every crisis that any listener is going to have in the back of their mind can be categorized as either systemic or threatening. And the difference between them is that systemic, there is not an active threat. No one is out to get you. You know, a perfect example would be like a hurricane. The hurricane happens whether people were there or not. The hurricane sweeps across the landscape, whether, you know, people are in its way or not. It's not actively seeking to hurt people. And then the opposite of that, now we're on the threatening side, is, you know, perfect example would be a terrorist attack. Right. These are individuals that absolutely are trying to hurt someone. And, you know, when you understand that there's a difference between those two, and you've got a little bit of an idea of how people react to that difference, well, that's the foundation for, you know, next steps when this next, whatever the next crisis is, when it strikes.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. Very interesting. That's a great way of explaining it. And I'm curious about, obviously, the current crisis we're in, COVID. It feels like so many people are having those like scratch your head moments. There's massive unemployment, businesses are closing, stay at home, people are working virtually, you know, you name it, life looks very different than it did last year. But then that's also coupled with really records with the stock market. And I, you know, why do these things not move in tandem?
Well, I think it's because people are misunderstanding what investors think when it comes to crisis. So one of the things that I talk about in the book is the ability to surprise an investor. Surprise fear that, you know, that initial response is really the, you know, the catalyst for a lot of the bad movement in the stock market. But it's hard to surprise us. It really is very difficult. And so, you know, here we are in a pandemic. Death is still very much a part of this COVID crisis. And yet the stock market is up. And the reason for that, among the many reasons, but from a crisis preparedness perspective, the reason for that is we're used to it. We get used to things so quickly. As an animal, we don't take long to get comfortable with the new norm. And we, you know, we can think about that in terms of, you know, a bad smell. You walk into a room and how long does it take before that bad smell is not bothering you anymore?
Yeah. You know, Good point.
Yeah,
good
we
point.
Adapt quickly. And so, you know, this pandemic, it's very real. But the crisis for investors, now what we're dealing with is the aftermath. This is the aftermath of the investors' crisis. The actual drop and reaction, that all happened back in March and April of 2020.
Yeah, it's such an interesting perspective when you think about it that way. And you're right. We do as creatures adapt really quickly. And you talk about this in your book that obviously history has a way of repeating itself. And I think that's what's really fascinating is you can look at past crises and know that we're going to have future crises. And, you know, what can you borrow from the past to teach you about the present? So, I mean, this is a question that we could probably talk hours and hours and hours about, but how does somebody who's listening to this, maybe who is a newer investor, how do we get financially prepared for a future crisis? I mean, how do we really embody that word prepared?
Well, I think it's no different from being prepared for anything else. Preparation is rather similar, whether you're preparing for, you know, a bad freeze that's going to come and maybe the water pipes in your house need to be taken care of, or preparing for the fact that, you know, you could have a flat tire in the future. And in fact, I love the flat tire example because I just recently taught my 16-year-old daughter how to drive and how to take care of a flat tire. And it was maybe an hour, hour and a half of our life of, you know, using the tire jack and, you know, loosening the nuts and talking about the order that you go in. And just that education, it changes things. Even if she never has a flat tire in her life, I mean, probably she will, but just the education, I mean, she has a lot more confidence, a lot more courage. The ability to weather the storm is higher just because of how she feels about the situation. So, you know, in the investment markets, it's the exact same thing. Get a little bit of instruction, a little bit of education. Obviously, I think that my book is a great first step. But, you know, there's another book out there I think is also a great step, and that's called Factfulness by Hans Rosling. It's an excellent text that tells us how fear really distorts our ability to make good decisions, and that, in fact, the world is quite different than what we tend to think of it. And I think it's the same when a crisis strikes, that fear hits us and we don't make the very best decisions. But with preparation, our ability to manage our fear, to recognize it for what it really is, to see past it, is all heightened. So just the act of a little education really propels you forward. And then, you know, there's the, you know, getting out of the touchy-feely, oh, I feel good because I prepared. There's also just the real life scenario of, well, there was 20 action steps in this book. I've done 4 of them. This is real movement forward. This is going to make a difference for me. You know, just like with the driving down the road, when the flat tire hits, well, I've got the jack in my car. I've got the spare tire in my car. Those were actual things that I made sure were done so that I am prepared.
Yeah, I like that analogy a lot. And I'm glad you brought up those action steps. So many of them really jumped out at me. I really love number 4, where you say, don't use your savings to buy things that cost money. Instead, buy things that make money. And I think that's such a different perspective for us to think about because, you know, particularly when we're 20s, 30s, even 40s, I mean, you could probably argue any age bracket, we like to buy stuff. Stuff makes us feel good. Stuff, when we don't feel good, we buy stuff. You know, stuff makes us feel better, that we're at a higher place in our lives, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I just wish you could talk us through a little bit about, you know, how do you balance out that stuff versus, you say, you know, buy things that actually make money? Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more.
You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. Okay, listen, like many of you out there, I love Notion, our sponsor today, and I honestly use it every day for my notes and journaling. I also track our family expenses, and I manage all of our household to-dos. Notion has been such a lifesaver in helping me get a lot more organized because that's not one of my strengths, without stressing me out. Notion is a place where any team can write, plan, organize, and rediscover the joy of play. It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. Notion is the AI-powered workspace
that can summarize things like meeting notes and automatically generate action items and help you get answers to questions in seconds. It will honestly blow your mind. Notion is for everyone, whether you're a Fortune 500 company, you're a freelancer, you're starting a startup, or you're a student juggling classes and clubs, or you're somebody like myself that just really wants to get organized. Try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/ETM. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/ETM, and start turning ideas into action. And when you use our link, you are supporting our show, notion.com/ETM.
Rakuten helps you be a smarter shopper and save money on just about everything. People all have things they need to buy, whether it's home essentials or a self-care treat just for you. With Rakuten, you get cash back on clothes, groceries, travel, and much, much more. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other deals like store sales and credit card points. In case you're wondering, the stores on Rakuten are the ones you know and love, and lots of cool ones waiting to be discovered, including Target, Lowe's, and Nike. When it comes to savvy shopping and saving money, Rakuten is a no-brainer. It's free and easy to join. Just go to Rakuten.com now or download the Rakuten app today. That's Rakuten.
We have an Ask Shauna, and this one comes from Terry. Terry says, "Hi, Shauna. I don't have a question, but rather a thank you. In February last year, I lost my job and honestly panicked almost to the point of a severe panic attack. I didn't know what to do for a few weeks. I had been listening to your show for some time now and said, okay, let me dive back into some episodes when you talked about side hustles. I got inspired, even made some money mantras, put them up on my walls, and decided, why not? Let me just give it a try. I'm a bit old school and love knitting, so I decided I would start by making a few hats and scarves and put them up on Etsy and just see what happened. As you say, what is the worst case scenario? I started getting so many orders, I had to bring on some friends to help. Well, long story short, I am now here writing you over 8 months later, letting you know that I'm making more money now than I was before and have a growing business. You've inspired me to be smart with my money, save for taxes, start separate savings accounts for goals, work on my mindset literally every single day. I still have those mantras taped up on my walls, and when I look at them, I think of you. I can't thank you enough. I know you really didn't do anything, but you actually did. You hung out with me every day until I decided to take action and felt like a friend along the way. Thank you, thank you. I don't know where the road is going, but I have confidence that I don't need to freak out as much about money anymore. I hope my story inspires somebody else to really take your episodes to heart and pull out what they learn and then put it to work. They say one person can't make a difference, but I wanted you to know that you are one person who has made a difference. So thank you again." Well, Terry, I love this story. I'm going to continue to say I didn't really do anything. I'm just here talking with you twice a week, maybe showing up a couple more times a week, depending on how many episodes you listen. But you're right, you did the hard work. You actually dug in. And I have been in so many of those moments in my life where I didn't know what to do when the rug got pulled out, and panic and fear and dread. I can remember way back when I was just out of college, I had run a business through college and ended up selling it, and then worked at this really amazing startup at a pretty high position. And it was when the dot-com era was really getting juicy and there was a lot of money flowing in, but there weren't a lot of business models yet. And so I worked at this company and I was one of the heads, and I was in my 20s and didn't know what I was doing, but sitting at a table with a lot of older men, I would say, who apparently did know what they were doing. And it was a scary time. It was an exciting time. And then one day it just all blew up. And I can remember going to dinner with my family that night, and I don't think I participated in the conversation at all. I just sat there thinking, what in the world am I going to do? What am I going to do? I was making great money. Now I don't have anything. I sold my business. I don't even know what to do with myself. That was a real turning point for me. And when I decided to go back and get my MBA, that kind of led to all of this. So sometimes those rugs being pulled out are just great inspiration and motivation for new things. So I'm so excited for you, and we are a community here. So I think it's great to just cheer each one of us on. And your story has really even inspired me. I'm getting ready to do something big in a few days. I'll tell you more in future episodes, but I needed to hear your story to remind myself that change is not always a bad thing, and that taking the courage, you just never know what's going to turn out. So, Terry, I'm excited for you, and I can't wait, and I can't wait to get one of those hats. So do tell, please let me know your Etsy store name so I can go out and support you as well.
It's such a hard thing to balance. And I think you're right that 20s, 30s, and 40s, this is the age where that challenge is at its greatest. I really respect the difficulty of this balance. So just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, if somebody who's listening to our conversation, if they have a expensive car, you know, we'll talk about a car that costs $35,000 to $85,000. That's expensive. You know, that's compared to what they could have gotten, you know, that's a lot of money.
That's a down payment on a house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It really is a lot of money. Okay. So the question becomes, why did they get that when they could have something else that did not cost as much? And the answers are going to be wildly different. But somewhere in there, there's a minority of people that have a legitimately important, clearly objective reason. But the majority of people, it's going to be about status. It's going to be about keeping up with the Joneses. It's going to be something that connects them to materialism. And this is a very difficult game to play, because there's always someone who has a bigger house. There's always someone who has a fancier car. You know, it doesn't matter how many wristwatches you have, someone's going to have the one that you don't. And so it becomes this almost black hole of, you know, my next goal, it's going to show that I'm successful. And then you reach it and, well, I'm the same person I was. You know, I'm driving this really fancy car, but what's really changed inside me? I think maybe I need to go for an even bigger, fancier car, you know? And
yes.
It's a really difficult path to walk. And I think that particular action step, I love that you hone in on it first, because of all of them, I think that's the one that could probably be an entire book all by itself, because it touches on some of the really important topics that, you know, people who are just getting out of college, who are beginning their career, that they're facing. And this, you know, you're right. I could talk about this for hours. This is what has birthed the FIRE movement, is that people recognize I am not happier with more bricks and windows around me, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I've gone through a transformation myself. I mean, I certainly had a point in time where I thought the fancy car and the stuff made the difference. And then I went through a little over 10 years ago, a bad divorce, and lost it all except a suitcase with my clothes in it. And that was really just sort of the very strong aha moment that none of this stuff really matters. I mean, in fact, now I have a house and I'm remarried and we obviously have more stuff. And there are days I go in the house, I'm like, I don't need all this stuff. What is this? Why did we spend money on all this stuff? You know, my husband kind of shakes his head. But, you know, I think this is a tough thing to learn. Sometimes you have to go the hard way, like I did, and really, really learn it that way. And I talk a lot about mindset on this show, because it's something that I really feel is an edge, is a difference when you can understand money mindset and why you think, act, and feel certain ways. You know, how do you begin to shift your thinking when it comes to this? Like, how do you begin to like really have those aha moments of, I do want to invest in things that make money. You know, how do you have that shift?
Well, there's probably a myriad of ways. In my 20 years of helping people deal with this, the way that I've landed on is actually another one of the action steps in the book. And it's not so much that you're going to have to, you know, snap your fingers and suddenly think differently. I think it starts with doing something differently that leads to you thinking differently. And the doing something is to set your lifestyle, to really limit it. The way that I suggest doing it in the book is that everything you make, every dollar, every cent that you earn, whether it's from a garage sale or from your regular job or from a bonus or, you know, however it is that the money comes into your life, it all goes to savings, every cent of it. And then once a month or twice a month, whatever's comfortable in your household, you pull out the fixed amount of money to your checking account, and that is what you use to live off of. And by doing this, this is the action that starts. And then what happens is that your mindset follows, because then when you want to do something that's actually outside your lifestyle, well, you go to your checking account and the money's not there, you know, and it helps you, you bump into the limits that you put on yourself, and it helps you to, you know, to stay the course with this mindset that you don't want to expand your lifestyle. It doesn't matter if your t-shirt says, you know, a fancy brand on it or not. You know, what you want to do is you want to expand your net worth. And even better than that is you want to expand your different ways that you're making money. And that's what this action step that you brought up is all about. Is it's about buying things that make you money instead of things that just cost money and your money's gone.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's so powerful. I'm curious, you mentioned another one of your action step, favorite action steps are, do you have any others that really jump out at you?
Well, the one I just mentioned, it's a real game changer for folks. You know, we've had clients, you know, really smart people, Fortune 500 executives that, you know, we'd look back over 5 years, you know, the last 5 years, and we'd see that they were saving some fixed amount every single month. And it was that set it, forget it kind of a mindset, like, oh, I'm saving. It's good. I'm saving every month. I'm saving. I'm moving forward. And I think a lot of people listening to this conversation are thinking, well, yeah, that's what I do too. That's a good thing, right? Well, we'd look back at their 5 years and we would see that people don't make money in a straight line. It's very lumpy. It's very organic.
Yes.
Yeah. And so with bonuses coming in and with pay raises that happen, you know, their life expanded. The 5 years, the money just kind of like filtered away because it was available in the checking account. And, you know, if they had set their savings as where all their money went into and then moved money out to checking the way that action step describes, it would have been a six-figure amount of money in 5 years that they could have used to do, you know, to do what makes sense and not to just be
wow.
So yeah, I do love that action step. But you know, another one that I love that people I think underestimate the importance of is to guard your privacy.
Okay, tell me more.
Sure. So one of the action steps talks about the importance of valuing and guarding your privacy, and the way that I try to support the importance of that is with historical examples and, you know, and different book events and different situations, you know, speaking events. This is the one that people express the most shock about, that they're surprised at the historical data that shows how people treat each other when they aren't guarding their privacy. So just as a quick example, you know, we have in the United States real situations where the New York Times reported on people being killed, being murdered because their political views or their ideas about soldiers and the military were different from, you know, what was the norm at the time.
Right.
Another, I think, kind of devastating example that a lot of people just don't hear about in our U.S. history classes is the internment of Japanese Americans after World War II. You know, we can't do much about our heritage. You know, we can't change our heritage, but the things that we can keep private, it's important to do so. And it's such a problem today. You know, when you go onto social media, it's very divisive. I mean, people they're caustic, you know, it's really
kind of it is. It actually really bothers me to an extent. I mean, just having the platform that I do with the podcast, like the things that people feel justified to tell you or share with you. I mean, it really blows my mind.
Well, in times of crisis, those private things that you should have guarded, they can really be used against you. And sometimes all you had to do is just not say anything. You know, guarding your privacy is, I mean, at the bare minimum, it would increase the happiness and the good manners online today, right?
Right. You know, and if that's all there is, I'm more than happy. I'm more than happy with that.
You and me both.
Yeah. Well, I also read in the acknowledgement section of your book that I believe you said it took this book about like 10 years in the making. So I'm curious, what made you stay the course and really, really want to bring this book to life?
Well, I think the main thing that helped me to stay the course was just the constant drip, drip, drip reminder from people all over the planet who had entrusted my team with their money, their questions. You know, they would ask questions such as, hey, I just read this in the news. Am I ready for this? And I'm really worried about XYZ. You know, am I going to still be able to retire? I mean, I think it's very normal that we connect our financial stability and our future security with the instability and the, you know, the worries of tomorrow. That's a very normal connection to make. And, you know, when the answer from Wall Street time and time again is, well, just do nothing, just ignore it, just put your head in the sand, don't worry, this will pass. When the next crisis hits, there's nothing you can do. You just outlast it and everything will be fine. I think somewhere inside everybody is a common sense voice that says to them, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. Yeah. Like how can that work? You know? And I had mentioned before this other book, Factfulness. You know, I think the two of them together, Factfulness and The Prepared Investor, they really will change the way that you look at, you know, the common sense approach to seeing the world around you.
I like that common sense. I think we need a lot of that. Just to wrap up a little bit, you know, what can we all learn to be smarter investors kind of all the way around? If somebody's a newbie investor, what do you want them to take away from your book so that they feel like they're empowered to go out and invest from a really prepared standpoint?
That's a wonderful question. I think there's a number of things I'd like for them to get from the book, but the most important thing is a sense of security and courage to face whatever the next crisis might be. We have been through truly horrific times. And while that on the surface feels negative, it's actually very encouraging. We've made it through, you know, the world truly is a better place than it was 100 years ago. There's less death, there's less violence, there's less disease, there's more medical capability. I mean, the list goes on and on. The next crisis, when it comes, I hope that my book offers a real sense of confidence that we can get through it and that we don't have to just sit on the sidelines and hope, that we actually can be proactive and protect or even grow our net worth in the face of that crisis.
I love it. Well, Chris, this has been so great. Thank you for imparting so much wisdom on us. I love for you to tell the listeners where they can go to find your book, The Prepared Investor, and also connect with you.
Thank you. Well, so my name again is Chris Mansky, and a quick Google of my name is going to, you know, see me on LinkedIn, on Twitter. You'll see me on Facebook, and I'm happy to connect on all those places. My firm's website has a great blog with all kinds of going-ons, and you could see that at manskywealth.com. To get the book, greatest place is just go online wherever you normally buy books, and it's there. Amazon does a great job of ranking it against all the other books, so if you buy it from there, it helps our ranking. But you know, I also like the indie outlets. We've got a number of the prepared investor books going through the indie websites, and that's great too.
One of my favorite parts of this episode is when Chris talked about spending your savings on things that make you money. That was just mind-blowing to me, and it's a theme that we've been hearing a lot from a lot of other guests lately. And quite honestly, I wish I would have had this perspective in my early 20s, but I think that's the beauty of money. We're allowed to learn and make mistakes and learn some more. And so hopefully Chris's message has really inspired you. Hey, look, if you found this episode interesting, please do me a favor, share it around, share it with friends, family members. It is the number one way we can keep this show growing and continue to bring on awesome guests like Chris. So thank you so much for being here.
Hey, you.
Yes, you.
Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com, where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.